This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. The national park has new leadership shaped here in the Mountain State.
Children learn best about the outside world by being out there and getting down on your belly and turning over rocks and looking for bugs. And I think that is a lot about how I grew up.
This is West Virginia Morning. The National Park Service got a new leader last month. Margaret Everson grew up in West Virginia and has decades of natural resources experience. Most recently, she was Principal Deputy Director of the Fish and Wildlife Service, but has also worked for Ducks Unlimited and as General Counsel for the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources. Reporter Brittany Patterson spoke with Everson about how growing up in West Virginia affected her outlook on the natural world, how the agency is balancing newfound interests in its parks during COVID-19, and how recently passed laws could bring big changes to the National Park Service.
I understand you're a native of West Virginia.
I am. I grew up, I was born and raised in Morgantown, West Virginia. And I know, in West Virginia, you sort of give the bigger city. And I grew up out by Cheat Lake. Spent my childhood out in the Cheat Lake area. I had wonderful memories of growing up out there.
So you have a long history working in conservation and natural resource issues. What drew you to those fields?
It really all goes back to, how I grew up, the values that were identified very early on in my life. And so there's this wonderful expression that a mentor of mine, a former director of the Fish and Wildlife Service, Dale Hall, uses. And he talks about this concept of belly botany, this idea that as children learn best about the outside world by being out there and turning over stones and getting down on your belly and turning over rocks and looking for bugs. And I think that is a lot about how I grew up.
We were outside pretty much my entire childhood, as I recall, whether we were hiking in the woods, we were riding our bikes, riding horses, getting outside and exploring the natural world. We had a very large garden growing up, and so learned a lot about, growing certain foods, shelling way too many peas. Those were the kinds of things I can remember as a child. And so as I looked at what I would study in college, I was affected very deeply by the way that I grew up. Also, my father was with the university, and he was in the physics department and then ran the planetarium. And so he was a big influence, I think, in connecting sciences. And so when I looked at colleges, I looked at studying sciences, particularly biology, and so ended up pursuing that as a career. But I always knew that I wanted to connect those outside spaces and places that really made a huge impact in my life at an early age to policy, which eventually took me to law school.
These are unprecedented times with a COVID-19 pandemic, and many people have been seeking outdoor recreation, sometimes for the first time, including in our national parks. How do you balance the act of keeping park employees and the parks themselves safe and maintained while also honoring this desire by the public to get outside?
Sure. And that is such an important question, the way that you phrase that, because it is that balance. Our number one priority is the safety and health of our employees and our visitors. And so that's really our North Star as we're looking at making these decisions. As we went into the pandemic, we didn't know a lot about the disease. We didn't know about the spread. And so at the very beginning, a lot of particularly our national parks had to take a pause in their operations until we figured out what a safe path forward was. And through careful planning, we have been able to do that. We know through the CDC, and we've worked so carefully with the CDC guidance, we know that outdoor spaces are a much lower risk, and we think that that's why people are choosing them.
The National Park Service is more than 100 years old. As you step into this role, what do you see as priorities for the agency?
Yes, we are 104 years old or young, the way that we look at it, because there are some wonderful opportunities. couple of weeks ago, we had a landmark opportunity that is really going to shape, I think, our trajectory forward. The president signed the Great American Outdoors Act. And what this act did, it was in two very important pieces. One of the pieces was to permanently fund in perpetuity the Land and Water Conservation Act. This is incredibly important. There's a federal side and a state side that look at being able to acquire places to allow the public or to welcome the public to come to parks and other places. There's also the state side that encourages recreation opportunity within the state. Really important this side of thinking about in West Virginia, the Gauley, for example, has utilized these funds to be able to add to the park there, the Gauley River. The other side of it was the they called it the Parks Bill, which basically provided the funding, $1.3 billion annually for the next 5 years, will go to the National Park Service to be able to invest in the backlog and maintenance. I think this is really important. So currently, the National Park System has about $12 billion worth of backlog and maintenance. These are places in our units that have fallen into disrepair, and we are going to be aggressively working with these new dollars on a plan forward to be able to get on top of these needs.
Is there anything else I'm missing? Anything that you'd like to add?
Well, I think one of the things just to really highlight, and I think it was part about one of your earlier questions, and that's really the importance of having public places, these national parks, open through the pandemic and through as we're moving forward and being able to really invest in these places through the Great American Outdoors Act. And I think it's continuing to be important, particularly as we look at what this brings to the economy in West Virginia. We know that the recreation economy is so important across the state. I think that there were over a million and a half visitors to national parks in West Virginia just last year, with almost $90 million in economic benefits to local communities. This is a huge driver for the economy there in West Virginia. And it's something that I am particularly proud of being a native of West Virginia.
That was the new head of the National Park Service, Margaret Everson, speaking with reporter Brittany Patterson. In a new book titled The Southern Wildlife Watcher, Notes of a Naturalist, author Rob Simbick explores the wonders and curiosity of wild animals you might be taking for granted, like coyotes, American robins, or even the underappreciated earthworms. The book features essays about 36 animals, 12 each, that share land, water, and air with humans throughout the southeastern United States. Eric Douglas spoke with him to learn more.
Tell me why you wanted to focus our attention on some of those more common animals.
I think too often we are prone to think of the outdoors as something special you've got to drive somewhere to see, and that the wildlife really worth paying attention to is the bald eagle, or to see dolphins when you're at the beach, or to catch a glimpse of a bobcat or something, which we hardly ever do. And for me, the thing that's special about the natural world is that it's all around us all the time. We as humans are set in the midst of a natural world that was already here with too many things that we can take for granted. And one of the overriding and seldom stated purposes for the book is just to make us appreciate that and to see what responsibility we have as wildlife watchers to respect what is around us.
Read for me that last paragraph in your description of the robin.
Wildlife watchers often thrive on sightings of the rare and unusual, but experience teaches us an ever-renewed appreciation for the ordinary. For those of us in the United States, the American robin is quintessentially ordinary, but its quirky presence can serve as a quotidian delight, a constant reminder of the riches to be found all around us.
How does that exemplify nature for you?
As a kid growing up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, the most common bird there that I saw was the American robin. You could not look out your window or walk out your door on a spring, summer, or fall day and not see a robin hopping across the grass looking for something to eat. And so it's easy to look at them with jaundiced eyes and not catch the magic about them. I mean, every time I really study one in the yard here in Tennessee, I'm amazed by that interplay of black and brown and white and the way the white shows on the underside of the tail and things like that. They are a really pretty bird. And if there were very few of them, I think we would be more cognizant of that.
In some degrees, the Appalachians are kind of thought as, we don't have the big fauna. We don't have the big animals that you have out west. What are the favorite things you like to see in the Appalachians? What are some of the favorite animals from the Appalachian chain?
To spend a day in the woods just with the warblers in the thick woods of Pennsylvania and West Virginia can be delightful. Although, as I say in the book, I'm more of a woodpecker guy, because with the warblers, they're at the top of the trees, they're eating worms, they're flitting around, it's hard to see them, and by the time you do, you got to think, which field mark was that? Whereas opposed to a woodpecker, they'll announce their presence, the pileated especially will tear big hunks of bark off trees and yo-ho-ho their way around the forest. And so between the big critters like that, and of course the things you find in the water, from the bullfrogs to the crayfish, which we do something on. My first view of reproduction was a mama crayfish in a big tin wash tub that we had put it in. And, I have memories all up and down the food chain.
You use a lot of experts. Obviously you're very, very conversant in the natural world, but this isn't just you and your opinions. You use a lot of experts and references throughout the book as well.
This book has two components. Number one is, hey, guess what I saw yesterday in essay form? And part two is, and let's talk to somebody who really knows their stuff and fill in the gaps and let's learn as much as we can, as interestingly as we can in, 1,000 or 1,200 words per species. And so there are about 50 experts that I drew on.
That was Rob Simbeck speaking with Eric Douglas about his new book, The Southern Wildlife Watcher. This is part of a series of interviews with authors who are from or writing about Appalachia. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glennis Ford. This is West Virginia Morning.